Brazil phase out fossil fuels, wean themselves off fossil fuels while we continue ourselves to expand and get rich from them. We have to, you know, there is, we have no moral, you know, authority to do that. The UK, the US, the developed countries have to go first, and they have to provide the means of implementation for indigenous communities and for developing countries to transition away and to really take the climate action that the whole world needs.
And finally, we have 20 seconds. If you want to comment on one of the heads of DESA having an arrest warrant out for him for the murder of Berta Cáceres.
That is huge news. Daniel Atala Midens is from one of the most powerful oligarchs in Honduras, politically and economically powerful. His father and his uncles were the majority shareholders in DESA. And
Nina, so that is a tease for our post-show interview. We're going to post online at democracynow.org, along with our interview with Sonia Guajajada, Nina Lacani of The Guardian. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, December 18th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting will be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's end-of-year campaign is happening right now. We invite you to donate and become a member today. We have the full spectrum of ways to join. Go to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44321. You can also mail a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Cut through the clouds and make it rain to help us meet our $75,000 goal by December 31st.
Well, this is KBOO Portland. The time is 5:02. Special thanks to the recent donors to our end-of-year campaign. Thanks to David B., James M., and Joe K. Be like these nice people and support KBOO today. kboo.fm/give. Now, the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Public School unionized employees push back on compensation during the shortened winter break.
Former Portland Commissioner Steve Novick intends to run again for city council.
And in international news, Pope Francis says priests can bless same-sex unions.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, December 18th, 2023. KBOO is currently in our end-of-the-year campaign, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Though the Portland teachers' strike may be over, the relationship between Portland Public Schools and their unionized workforce is far from healed. Last week's school board meeting ended in a shouting match between a member of the board and union reps about fair compensation for this added work week. This week would normally be a vacation week for staff and students at PPS, but winter break will be cut in half in order to make up for some of the school days that were lost during the historic teacher strike that resulted in students missing 11 days in class. KBOO's Isabel Charlet has the story.
We are asking the adults in our schools to sacrifice as a result. I think it's worth acknowledging that sacrifice. And I just want to say that this is what happens in a work stoppage. I wish we didn't have to pay substitutes time and a half in order to come back. And I wish some of our PAT members we're also focusing on our students in terms of being there in the week that we need them to be there. And with that, we can adjourn the meeting, Chair Hollins.
All right, meeting adjourned.
That's PPS School Board member Andrew Scott responding to union members' comments at the end of the school board meeting last week. Union reps from SEIU, PAT, and PFSP all expressed their dismay that substitute teachers, who are represented by PAT, will all be receiving time and a half during this week, while members of other unions, who had no say in the decision to add the week, will receive nothing extra for the added work days and lost vacation time.
The district was very clear that they would not pay any extra incentive money for an employee, any employee across the district for that week. It was a hard no, and we didn't push it. Well, we found out on Friday that substitute teachers will be making time and a half next week. It was such a slap in the face. I want to be clear, we're very happy that the substitute teachers are getting paid time and a half. They deserve it, and it's the right thing to do. But once again, the lowest paid workers get nothing, and we were lied to.
This is Veronica Green with SEIU, who represent nutrition services and custodial workers of Portland Public Schools. Most PPS cafeteria staff earn less than $24,000 a year, and SEIU has been bargaining with PPS for a new contract since February.
I want to tell you about the real ways that bargaining at a snail's pace is affecting our members. We did not get our annual raise in July because we're working without a contract. And because we didn't get our annual raise, we, the lowest paid workers at PPS, are struggling more than ever. Many of us are worried about not being able to afford a nice meal for the holidays and instead have to rely on food boxes. I'm not sure if any of you or PPS administration have ever had to worry about feeding your kids or keeping a roof over their heads, but it's scary and it's real.
Elizabeth Held spoke at the meeting for PFSP, the union representing paraeducators and teacher assistants, nearly half of whom have to work second or third jobs to afford their basic needs.
Our members worked every day of the work stoppage. Many of our members worked full days the whole time. When we found out that not only were PAT substitutes being offered time and a half, but also non-represented substitute school administrative assistants and paraeducators who do the exact same work, the exact same time, side by side as our represented workers, were being given time and a half pay, but that no incentive would be offered to our representative members. We are feeling extremely disrespected.
Angela Bonilla, president of the Portland Association of Teachers, shared empathy and support for the other unions currently struggling in negotiations with the school district.
It's gross. It's gross to know that as the highest paid workers in our unionized workers in our district, that we are continued to be prioritized over folks who are struggling to make rent and to be able to afford groceries.
After months of failed bargaining, PFSP and SEIU are scheduled to start mediation in January. PFSP membership has already rejected two tentative agreements with the district, and if mediation does not help the process along, it is possible that Portland might see another strike in PPS.
It's time to settle a fair contract now, so we don't have to keep dragging this out and risk another strike. We don't want to strike. We want to be done.
After last week's school board meeting ending in a shouting match, it's clear that tensions are still running high between the school district and the three unions representing their workers. But for Veronica Green of SEIU, the path towards reconciliation is uncomplicated.
And I want to work with you guys to make it better. And to make it better, you have to lift up us at the bottom, not just at the top. Lift us up. Thank you.
For KBOO News, I'm Isabel Charlet.
In more local news, former City Commissioner Steve Novick is running for office again, this time represent District 3, which encompasses a large part of inner southeast Portland. He previously served on the Portland City Council from 2013 to 2017 and oversaw the city's transportation bureau. Novick lost his seat to Chloe Udaly in a runoff election in 2016. Novick was notable for creating the city's tax on publicly traded corporations that pay their CEOs more than 100 times the salary of their average worker. He was also behind the 10-cent tax on every gallon of gas sold within the city limits. Novick says if elected, his goal is to help return Portland to its glory days. He told the Portland Mercury, quote, "It's been a rough few years in Portland, but we can't give up on our city," end quote. He's now one of 10 candidates running for the District 3 seat in the 2024 election, which will usher in a newly restructured city government comprised of 12 city council members.
Following union-related firing, Starbucks Coffee has rehired 36 employees nationwide after those terminations were ruled illegal. Though there are nearly 700 reports of such firings, including 41 in the state of Oregon, the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, judge has sided with the workers in only 400 cases so far. Starbucks has been criticized for increasing job duties and decreasing workplace supports. In the case of one reinstated barista, these included an active shooter training. Unanimous voting at the Johnson Creek Crossing Starbucks in 2022 unionized the baristas at that location. Shortly thereafter, barista Heather Clark was denied a manager position, with supervisors citing her support of the union. After Clark reported anti-union activity by her managers following the firing, the NLRB took action on a consolidated case against Starbucks. Clark and a co-worker's firings were ruled illegal on November 27th, and they have since been reinstated. Starbucks spokesperson Andrew Troll said on behalf of the company that they plan on appealing the verdict. Unionized baristas are still waiting on union contracts 2 years after joining up, and negotiations between the union and management have reportedly stalled on both sides.
Pope Francis will allow priests to bless same-sex couples, the Vatican announced today. It's a move to make the Catholic Church more welcome to LGBTQ plus people. New York Times reports that the new rule was issued in a papal declaration, which made clear that the blessing of homosexual couples is not to be confused with the holy sacrament of marriage. The church still maintains that marriage is a ceremonial rite limited to heterosexual couples, and that blessing a gay relationship is not to be imparted by clergy during the ceremony of any same-sex union. Instead, the declaration specified that these blessings should only be done during informal occasions, such as meetings with the priest or as part of a group prayer. This edict from Pope Francis is being seen as a sign of his desire to open the Catholic Church up to sensitive topics and help it become less rigid. This change comes as many Christian denominations are divided over the issue of homosexual unions. In the U.S., Methodist and Presbyterian churches have experienced the splitting of their congregations as more conservative believers break away. The new declaration follows another pronouncement from the Pope issued in October, which approved the baptism of transgender people, allows them to serve as godparents and be witnesses at church weddings.
As of January 1st, it will be legal in Oregon for drivers to pass a slow-moving cyclist in a no-passing zone. KLCC News reports that the law was approved during the 2023 Oregon legislative session with no opposition. Previously, Oregon traffic statutes permitted drivers to go around any obstruction, but the law didn't make clear exactly what constituted an obstruction. The new law now defines that as being any object traveling at less than half the speed limit. It's a change that bicyclists welcome. According to bicycle advocate Richard Hughes of Eugene, it makes riders extremely nervous when cars follow them for miles on rural roads because drivers believe passing bikes is illegal. Under the new rule, motorists will need to slow to at least 5 miles below the speed limit while passing and must maintain a reasonable distance when passing to avoid a falling cyclist.
Georgia election workers react to the Giuliani defamation verdict. Lawmakers come under fire for questioning a Muslim American judicial nominee on Gaza. And Michigan takes key steps to aid voting rights for formerly incarcerated people. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I've spent 10 years as an election worker in Fulton County, Georgia. The lies Rudy Giuliani told about me and my mommy after the 2020 presidential election have changed our lives.
On Friday, a judge ordered Rudy Giuliani to pay Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman $148 million in damages after conspiracy theories he spread led to the two receiving racist death threats. They were awarded $75 million in punitive damages, while Moss and Freeman were separately awarded another $36 million in damages. In their defamation lawsuit, they were only seeking $43 million. But Giuliani is ready to appeal the decision, which was mostly to decide how much the damages would be. He says the absurdity of the number merely underscores the absurdity of the entire proceeding.
I am quite confident when this case gets before a fair tribunal, it'll be reversed so quickly it'll make your head spin, and the absurd number that just came in will help that, actually.
Although Giuliani said he has valuable information that could have helped his case, he declined to testify during the trial. When asked why, he said he felt any mistake on his part could lead to him being held in contempt. While Ruby Freeman is viewing this as a victory, she notes the work to hold people accountable for the lies about the 2020 election aren't over. In spite of this win, she acknowledges what this money can't do.
Money will never solve all of my problems. I can never move back into the house that I called home. I will always have to be careful about where I go and who I choose to share my name with.
Michigan is the first state to automatically restore voting rights for people leaving prison. The state corrections department already worked with the Secretary of State to register incarcerated people to vote once they're released. This legislation strengthens that program, which has seen more than 5,000 people registered. The new law takes effect in 2025. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley is being criticized for his questioning of Muslim American judicial nominee Adil Abdullah Manji. Along with Hawley, Republican Senators Tom Cotton and Ted Cruz posed questions about Israel, Palestine, and the Middle East. Edward Mitchell with the Council on American Islamic Relations denounced these questions as irrelevant and hostile.
Singling out a Muslim judicial nominee and forcing him to answer gotcha questions about the Middle East simply because of his faith or because of his tangential connections to Muslims who comment on the Middle East is un-American and Islamophobic.
As the year draws to a close, the Senate will be convening this week to hopefully finalize the supplemental aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. New York Senator Chuck Schumer says it's not easy to reach an agreement on something so complex.
This might be one of the most difficult things we have ever had to work through, but we all know that so much hangs on our success. We know the world is watching. We know autocrats like Putin and Xi are hoping for us to fail. So we need to try with everything we have to get the job done.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to an end-of-year campaign edition of the KABU Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by the end of the year, and we'd like to remind you that you can renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Mark Shapiro, the co-director of the documentary Downwind. It's about the impact of over 900 large-scale nuclear weapons explosions and the enduring effect it's had on three different communities downwind. Then an inside look at the exhibit Curious Objects on display now at Ethereal Reflections in Portland. At 6 o'clock, it's Labor Radio. Then at 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. And at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Your weather forecast, cloudy with some showers tonight and a low of 41 tomorrow. Rainy with a high of 51. Today in history, in 1944, the Supreme Court handed down the landmark Korematsu versus United States decision, which upheld the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. It's been cited as one of the worst Supreme Court decisions of all time. Constitutional scholar Bruce Fein called it, quote, an odious and discredited artifact of popular bigotry. It was overruled in 2018 in the decision Trump versus Hawaii. The quote of the day is from American civil rights activist Fred Korematsu himself, who said, quote, it may take time to prove you're right, but you have to stick to it.
Two Montana men have been indicted for allegedly killing more than 3,000 eagles for feather sales. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal grand jury this month indicted two men for allegedly killing eagles on the Flathead Reservation in Montana to sell feathers on the black market. Montana Public Radio's John Hooks has more.
The indictment charges two men, one from Ronan and one from Washington State, with illegally killing over 3,000 birds from 2015 to 2021. The men are also accused of trafficking parts from bald and golden eagles for significant sums of cash across the United States. The investigation was initiated by Fish and Game Conservation officers with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service concluded the investigation. In a statement, CSKT Chairman Tom McDonald said eagles have a tremendous significance to the ecosystem on the Flathead and to tribes' religious and cultural practices. Golden and bald eagles are protected under state and federal law. Taking or transporting feathers is outlawed except for religious use by tribal members. The indictment accuses the men of baiting eagles with deer carcasses before killing them and selling feathers, wings, and tail sets. The men are scheduled to appear in a Missoula court in January. A spokesperson for the Montana U.S. Attorney declined to comment on the indictment. For National Native News, I'm John Hooks.
One Utah nonprofit is visiting every structure in the western half of San Juan County to connect off-grid residents with essential services they do not receive due to a lack of an address. Alex Gonzalez reports.
Daylene Redhorse is an addressing specialist with the Rural Utah Project. She explains for those who live on the Navajo Reservation in San Juan County, formal street addresses are rare, so families may go without access to services, from mail delivery and internet to emergency medical services and the government-issued ID they need to vote. Redhorse is helping people get connected with the open-source Plus Code tool developed by Google, which consists of 10-digit versions of conventional geo-coordinates.
We're able to put people back in the right precinct or have them registered in the right precinct. Not only that, while doing this job, we're able to reach people who had no idea of where to register to vote.
Redhorse says the technology is simple and useful. The Rural Utah Project identified voting as a key target for the initiative when it found almost 90% of Navajo residents were registered by San Juan County at the wrong location and a quarter in the wrong precinct. Redhorse adds the Plus Codes do have limits, but she's encouraging service providers to use them. Redhorse says she took on the project and was determined to make a difference after her mother experienced a stroke and emergency personnel couldn't easily reach her, waiting for an hour as she tried to explain her location. Redhorse says because of the Plus Codes, firefighters and paramedics' response time has been shortened by at least 30 minutes.
So they're able to get to these homes. And that was another way we've seen that it was beneficial. A lot of people would like to see it help them on the postal side, but we're still trying to reach out to distributors to see if they can implement this code into their system.
In addition to rural Utah, similar models have also been implemented in densely populated urban areas that also lack addresses in countries like Brazil, Egypt, and India. I'm Alex Gonzalez. This story was produced with original reporting from Peter Young for Yes Media.
New Mexico Commissioner of Public Lands Stephanie Garcia Richard has extended the ban on new oil, gas, and mineral leasing on thousands of acres of state lands near Chaco Culture National Historical Park through December 2043. The commissioner placed the leasing ban on state lands in 2019, which was set to expire at the end of the year. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland issued a similar 20-year ban on federal lands in June. Pueblo leaders are among those celebrating the move. They want to see permanent protection of the area, while the Navajo Nation and Navajo allottees have come out in opposition. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Federal Trade Commission has proposed regulations on hidden charges known as junk fees to ensure businesses' honesty on financial pricing of their products. KBOO's Ezra has more on that story in Massachusetts.
Federal and state regulators are cracking down on so-called junk fees, which companies often use to hike prices on consumer products above what is advertised. These unexpected fees on hotel rooms, cars, concert tickets, and more cost people tens of billions of dollars each year, and some spend countless hours wading through the fine print of companies' terms and conditions. Deidre Cummings with the Massachusetts Public Interest Research Group says that these sneaky practices need to stop.
If you're going to advertise something for sale in Massachusetts, you have to disclose up front what is the cost? What are you charging?
The Federal Trade Commission has proposed new rules requiring businesses to do just that and is accepting public comments through January 8th. Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Campbell has also proposed stricter state regulations to ensure businesses provide clear and accessible information on whether these hidden fees are optional or required. Campbell has said she also aims to simplify the process for canceling trial offers and other recurring charges online. And Cummings says new rules would help ensure markets are fair and competitive and they would be made permanent.
At a federal level, laws can change based on who's in the administration or not. And so if something were to happen on the federal level, then we would have our own state protections here in Massachusetts.
Cummings says consumer protections around junk fees will only be stronger the more people share their own experiences. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Ezra.
New research finds biomass emissions are worse than those of other fossil fuels. Along with the climate impacts, this type of energy is shown to have detrimental impacts on human health. So why is it still considered renewable? Edwin J. Vieira investigates.
A new report finds woody biomass is worse for the environment than other fossil fuels. The study finds biomass facility emissions are almost 3 times higher than other fossil fuel energies. It also finds biomass contributes 3 to 17% of the emissions from the entire U.S. energy sector. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin has said biomass will be part of his all-of-the-above energy plan. Along with impacts to the environment, study co-author Edie Juno says biomass poses a risk to human health.
You know, with particulate matter, for example, you're going to see respiratory issues and illnesses and even increased risk of premature mortality. Others are going to be irritants to, you know, the nose and to, you know, mucous membranes and tissues. There are even some that are carcinogenic.
She says policymakers can use this report to better consider the carbon implications of energy sources. While Virginia is supposed to be climate neutral by 2050, amendments have been approved to keep biomass plants open. Only one state, Massachusetts, removed woody biomass from its renewable energy portfolio for the hazards it creates. Although biomass doesn't make up even a quarter of U.S. energy production, the study finds some facilities aren't part of current inventories. This means the sector's emissions could be underestimated. This can be seen in widespread impacts it's having on communities. Sarav Arunachalam is the study's senior author and describes how this happens.
It's possible based upon the prevailing winds, you know, the pollution may be going away from where people live, but we don't know. But the fact that we have over 2 million people in the U.S. living within a couple of kilometers of facility, I think that's a big number you want to watch out for.
Biomass is only considered a renewable energy because trees grow back. But experts such as Arunachalam and Juno note it takes several decades before trees grow to the point they can be cut down for energy use. This is Edwin J. Vieira for Virginia News Connection.
The powerful ocean current known as the Gulf Stream brings warm waters from the Caribbean up the East Coast, influencing regional weather patterns and coastal conditions. New research from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution finds that the Gulf Stream has warmed faster than the ocean as a whole over the past 2 decades and has now shifted towards the coast. That could mean changes in the northeastern U.S. for commercial fishing industries. Catherine Carley has more.
The latest research finds the Gulf Stream has warmed faster than the global ocean over the past 2 decades and has shifted toward the Atlantic coast. Scientists say the ocean current, which carries tropical water up the eastern seaboard, has warmed 2 degrees Fahrenheit since 2001 and could be pushing warmer water into the Gulf of Maine. Robert Todd with the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution says years of data collection confirm what climate models predicted.
Long-term ocean observing really is important, and we need to keep making those observations so we can understand what's actually happening in the climate system.
Todd says ocean temperatures are steadily rising as a result of human activities. He says the findings could determine how changes in the Gulf Stream will impact Maine's coastal industries. The Woods Hole study relied on more than 25,000 ocean temperature and salinity observations collected through the ARGO program, an array of some 4,000 floating robots throughout the global ocean. In addition, underwater gliders have slowly navigated the Gulf Stream, revealing warm rings of water, which Todd says could enter the Gulf of Maine and alter marine environments and species.
You can imagine if you have an organism that likes cold water, and suddenly the water is a whole lot warmer because this ring was there, that organism might not be there anymore or might suffer, and then the fisheries associated with that would suffer.
The Gulf of Maine, which stretches from Cape Cod in Massachusetts to Nova Scotia, Canada, is already considered one of the fastest warming ocean regions on the planet. Todd says the data collected is shared in real time with scientists around the world. For Maine News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
You are listening to an end-of-year campaign edition of the KBOO Evening News for Monday, December 18th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Isabel Charlet, my co-host Michelle Coppola, myself, and Ezra. The producer and engineer is the multi-talented Althea Billings. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Edwin J. Vieira, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, great folks like you. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year campaign, so now is a great time to join us. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, please go to kboo.fm/give or simply text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth, and have a great night.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to the KBOO News in Depth. I'm Reed Johnson. Oppenheimer was one of the biggest films of the year, and in its wake comes the documentary Downwind. We're speaking with Mark Shapiro, the co-director of the film. It's the story of real people who live downwind of the Nevada nuclear test site and how radioactive fallout has impacted their lives. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you so much